It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Chris, according to Federal Reserve data, the average worker in America today, despite a huge increase in productivity and technology, is earning exactly the same wages that he or she earned 45 years ago. In the last 30 years, the top 1% has seen an increase in their wealth of $21 trillion, while the bottom half of America has seen an actual decline in their wealth of some $800 billion. In other words, we have an economy today that is working phenomenally well for the top 1%, while the working class of this country is being decimated. Meanwhile, it seems to me that if we're going to bring about real change in this country, that means health care to all people, raising the minimum wage to a living wage, making sure that all of our young people can afford to go to college, dealing with climate change, dealing with criminal justice reform. We need fundamental change. We need a political revolution. We need millions of people, working class people, whose lives have been decimated for the last 45 years to stand up to Wall Street, to stand up to the insurance companies and the drug companies. A political revolution. That is what I believe in.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That was Bernie Sanders, the number one delegate count candidate in the Democratic attempt to make it to the White House, and of course, who just won in Nevada recently and is on his way to being the Democratic nominee. Sandy Rios with you. All right, so Bernie Sanders is saying that he wants a political revolution, and you've heard me say many times at this mic, I have unabashedly called Bernie Sanders a communist, but really, is that true? Am I overstating that, exaggerating? Why would I say such an outrageous thing? Because when he's actually asked point blank, he really never quite answers it. So today we're going to talk about that. And then there's someone else in the race, Pete Buttigieg, who I've said to you many times, I think is the most formidable candidate on the stage. And the reason I've said that is because he's very crafty and smooth. He reminds me of Barack Obama. But we're learning more about Pete Buttigieg and why he might just be so smooth. And actually, he and Bernie Sanders have a lot in common. And we're going to talk about that today with our guest. Our guest is Paul Kinger. Dr. Paul Kinger is a professor of political science at Grove City College. He also is an author of a number of really fine books, A Pope and a President, Dupes, How America's Adversaries Have Manipulated Progressives, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Communism, and oh, so many more. And I've interviewed him on most of those. Paul is just a national treasure and one of the nation's leading experts on communism. I've asked him to join us today. Good morning, Paul.
Hi, Sandy. Good morning. Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. So I want to just know, you are an expert on communism. You've been writing on it for a long time. And I'm curious to know, when did Bernie Sanders, the mayor of Vermont, come first to your attention?
Well, for a long time. So I've known about him, boy, going back, I guess, at least 20 years, right? But I study this kind of thing. And I remember, too, for example, teaching political science courses at Grove City College, where I teach, and I've been doing this every fall semester since 1997. I would write on the chalkboard the spectrum from left to right, and you'd start on the far left with Stalin and Lenin and Mao, and you kind of work your way over, and I'd put up on the board certain members of Congress, right? I'd say, well, here you have a moderate. A moderate would be like Sam Nunn or Scoop Jackson, or maybe from Pennsylvania, John Hines, maybe even Arlen Specter. Remember him, Sandy, right? He's a little
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah, that's it. Well, then you go a little more to the left, and you get over here, and now you get to, like, Ted Kennedy, Joe Biden. Now, here on the far left, whoa, this is Bernie Sanders, right? I mean, he was considered the other end of the spectrum. If you wanted to identify the most left-wing member of Congress, it was Bernie. Yeah, so left-wing that he wouldn't even call himself a Democrat. In fact, I don't think, Sandy, he began calling himself a Democrat until 2016, which James Carville has pointed out quite angrily. Carville has tried to tell fellow Democrats, look, Bernie's not even a Democrat, he's not. So I've known about him for a long time. He was always the socialist from Vermont. Everybody knew him as the socialist, and I always figured him too, and I think this is correct, as a Trotskyist as well. And to understand that, you have to know that Bernie was a very vigorous supporter of the Socialist Workers Party. And people can Google this. It's real easy to do. The Socialist Workers Party, that was the party that Trotsky and his followers created when Trotsky split from Stalin in the Soviet Union in the late 1920s. They published The Militant, the publication The Militant. And you know, here's a scary image. Google Lee Harvey Oswald, photo militant, and you can see online the assassin of President John F. Kennedy in an infamous photo where he's holding a copy of The Militant in one hand and the rifle that he shot JFK with in the other hand.
Wow.
So, really quite chilling. So the Socialist Workers Party, let me just say very clearly, we've never found evidence that Bernie was a formal member, but he campaigned for them, he gave speeches for them, and this is crucial, he's never denied this, everybody knows this, he was an actual formal presidential elector to the Socialist Workers Party in 1980. So when everyone in the country was deciding Carter or Reagan, Bernie didn't like either one. He was with the Socialist Workers Party candidate. And it's an old Trotskyist party. And a good question now would be for someone to ask Bernie, okay, did you leave that group? Do you repudiate that? If so, when, why, where do you stand today? Because, I mean, clearly, Sandy, he's still a socialist at the very least, right? If not a Trotskyist. And I'm sorry, I'm kind of going on, but one more thing. You played in your clip so perfectly Bernie talking about revolution. The Trotskyists preach what they call permanent revolution. That's a very common thing. If you go to Google and type in permanent revolution, the Trotskyist is the first thing that will pop up. So you hear Bernie using the word revolution all the time. He does it incessantly. And he no doubt understands that the vast majority of young kind of college dupes who really don't understand this stuff, they'll just cheer him like when they cheered Barack Obama talking about fundamental transformation. But a word like revolution out of the mouth of at least a one-time Trotskyist, that's a very loaded term, and it's something that people should be very wary of.
Yes, well, and wait, there's more, as they say on the television commercials. But wait, there's more. You know, Bernie says that he is a socialist Democrat. All right, so I want to ask you two questions, two sides of the same question. What do you think he means by no? What do you think he wants us to mean? What wants to think he means by that?
Yeah, very good question. And he's choosing a term there that's more benign, right? More politically palatable and acceptable, as you have people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And I think the term that he typically has been using more lately is democratic socialist. And he understands that the Democratic Socialists of America, so that's an actual group, the DSA, the website is dsa.org, that is the fastest growing socialist group in the country. The Socialist Workers Party doesn't have a lot of members. Communist Party USA, I follow this stuff. They're claiming, Sandy, Communist Party USA is that they're experiencing a membership surge under the Trump presidency, which is up like 500 people to like 3,000. So it's, wow. It's not much of a surge. But the Democratic Socialists of America, they were saying in 2018, 2019, that they are up to 50,000 members. And they call themselves on their website, quote, the largest socialist organization in the United States, quote unquote. So they don't even say Democratic Socialists there. They say largest socialist organization in the United States. They are socialists. And just because they put the word Democratic in front of it doesn't mean that they're more like, you know, traditional Democrats in the United States. In fact, to go way back, Trotsky and Lenin and Stalin, they were part of the Social Democratic Labor Party of Russia in the early 1900s. That's what the Bolsheviks were called before, in the year 1903. They got together, the Russian Social Democratic Labor Party, that's what it was called. And they met in Brussels, and they met in London, and they split into the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks. So that term doesn't mean that you're suddenly more democratic. And also too, the left is very abusive and slippery with this term democracy. Be very careful with that. You know, what Lenin said, when we talk about democracy, we mean equality. So young people think, oh yeah, democracy. Oh, we all support democracy. That's freedom of speech. You get to vote for your member of Congress. You get to vote for your president. But in the mentality of a hard radical leftist, democracy has a much more vague meaning to everybody else, and generally means this kind of nebulous notion of equality, however they want to apply it: economic equality, economic justice, social justice. So when Bernie uses these terms, especially given his past, people really need to drill down and ask him, what do you really mean by that? Because he probably doesn't mean what a lot of people are projecting onto him to mean.
Yes. So that's the first thing that we need to clear up. And also, I always try to point out, Paul, that in terms of the word socialist, the Soviet Union had socialist in their name. And as I recall, I believe it was Lenin, and you'll know, who said something about or declared that, or maybe it was Stalin, who declared that socialism is the gateway. They all know perfectly that socialism is the gateway to communism. I don't even know what kind of lines separate the two. Obviously, Europe doesn't practice socialism. They have some socialist programs, but they are really democratically elected, and they still are capitalists. So is there any country right now in our time that is strictly socialist but not communist?
Well, Richard Pipes, the late great Russian history professor and the Sovietologist, he had been at Harvard from 1950 until, when he died just 2 years ago. He was professor emeritus, still into his 90s. He says that there is no difference between the terms socialism and communism, at least as understood in Marxist-Leninist theory. And according to Marxist-Leninist theory, and Lenin wrote about this in his book, The State and Revolution, they believe that history passes through a series of phases. This would be the kind of dialectical march of history as Marx understood it. So history would go from feudalism to capitalism to socialism to communism. So socialism was just the next, the final step. The final transitionary step to communism. Marion Smith, who runs Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, you probably know him, Sandy, he has this great line where he says, when he's asked the difference between socialism and communism, he frequently says that, well, as Christians go to heaven, socialists go to communism.
Right? Paul, I have to interrupt you. Wow, we have to take a break because the music's playing. But while people are listening in this first segment, I want to commend Paul's latest article, which we're going to get to in just a second. It's Mayor Pete, Red Diaper Baby. So we're talking about all things in our culture and our politics right now, a socialist / communist, and the candidates that most represent those viewpoints. So you don't want to miss this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
You've said that young people don't see as much conflict between the concept of capitalism and the concept of socialism as past generations have seen. President Trump has been pretty clear that he's going to try to use the idea of socialism as a point of attack against Democrats. Take a listen to what he said at the State of the Union address.
Here in the United States, we are alarmed by the new calls to adopt socialism in our country. Tonight, we renew our resolve that America will never be a socialist country.
Are you worried at all that that might be an effective attack against Democrats?
I think he's clinging to a rhetorical strategy that was very powerful when he was coming of age 50 years ago, but it's just a little bit different right now. I know if you grew up during that Cold War period, then you saw a time in politics when the word socialism could be used to end an argument. Today, I think a word like that is the beginning of a debate, not the end of a debate. Look, America is committed to democracy, and we are essentially a market-based economy. But you can no longer simply kill off a line of discussion about a policy by saying that it's socialist. If someone my age or younger is weighing a policy idea, and somebody comes along and says, you can't do that, it's socialist, I think our answer is going to be, okay, is it a good idea or is it not? And that word has also lost its power, especially when you think about the way it was applied to characterize, for example, the ACA, an idea that was invented at the conservative, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, invented by a conservative think tank, relying on market principles, implemented first by a Republican governor, mm-hmm. and they said that was socialist. So I think the word has mostly lost its meaning, and has certainly lost its ability to be used as a kill switch on debate.
Very interesting. That was the voice of Mayor Pete, who's also doing very well. He's running second in the Democratic primary in terms of delegates behind Bernie Sanders. So Bernie Sanders, we at least got started on a discussion about his socialist slash communist past, which is what I would commend. Paul Kinger is my guest. Of course, Paul is a professor of political science at Grove City and is an expert on communism. He's written a new book, Well, maybe that's coming, Paul, but he's written a new book, article called Mayor Pete, Red Diaper Baby. Okay, so first of all, Paul, Red Diaper Baby, just give us an idea. Who are some other, just to set the stage here, other Red Diaper Babies that we know about?
Yeah, well, and if I could, on what you just played there from Mayor Pete, you know, it's really interesting that he said that. I think that was probably some time ago. But in the last couple of weeks, he has been suddenly very critical of Bernie for being a socialist. so he's trying to portray himself now as the sensible Democrat in the room, the grown up who's warning people about Bernie's socialism. And it's funny, but back when Donald Trump said that, the State of the Union, I think that was the State of the Union in 2019, how many liberals and people like Jake Tapper were portrayed as, you know, Donald Trump, you know, Joe McCarthy, here we come. He's, you know, pulling out the socialism boogeyman to scare everybody. Well, and right now it looks like a lot of Democrats themselves are kind of scared about it because you know, they know what could happen if their party nominates this old socialist guy. You know, he's the one guy that's probably guaranteed to lose 40 states to Donald Trump. So
Paul,
Mayor Pete is even worried about it now.
I have to interject a question for you, and I don't want to get us off track. But do you think the Democrats are afraid of Bernie because they're afraid they know he is an old red? He is. I can always see him. I can just say he think he should dress like a Bolshevik. I can see him in the cap and the double-breasted gray, you know, with the anyway. But they know that. Are they worried that he is that and he'll take the country in that direction? Or is there any real separation between their policies and his? They're just afraid he cannot get elected.
Well, that's very shrewdly put. And so definitely the latter. They're afraid that he can't get elected. But it's kind of older Democrats, right? James Carville clearly is very worried about this. If you followed Chris Matthews' comments,
mm-hmm. yes.
I mean, Matthews is an old Democrat, worked for Tip O'Neill, But he was a Cold War Democrat, right? There were these Democrats in the 70s and 80s who they were liberal, but they were anti-communist liberals. They were anti-Soviet liberals. You know, Arthur Schlesinger was like it. Even Woodrow Wilson, right? Woodrow Wilson, the progressive's progressive, was warning America in 1919, 1920 about these barbarians in the USSR, as he was calling them. So yeah, there's older people that get it. You know, they understand it. But also, that first debate that Michael Bloomberg was on the stage for, when Bloomberg a couple times called out Bernie for the three different homes that he owned, made some comments about capitalism and socialism. The audience booed, Sandy. It was stunning. I mean, you're waiting for them to start chanting, socialism, socialism, socialism.
Yeah. Our workers
they
unite.
Booed Bloomberg. And Bloomberg's probably thinking at that point, okay, I'm the moderate that could come in, the pro-business guy, and kind of rescue the party from the clutches of a socialist. So he goes in to kind of talk positively about capitalism, and he doesn't get cheered, he gets booed. So it's possible that these guys have yanked the party so far to the left, and by the way, where Bernie's not yanking it to the left, Mayor Pete is as a cultural radical. There wasn't a single pro-lifer anywhere to be found on the Democratic stage when they had two dozen candidates a year ago. So, I don't know. I mean, either way, I think sensible people in the party realize that their number one priority is to defeat Donald Trump, and they're not going to do it with a socialist. And I'll say this, too. Even a lot of the Hollywood lefties and, the kind of, New York City liberals, as Ted Cruz might put it, they don't want socialists to come in and take 70% of their income. And so they might quietly go in there, and all their talk about whatever, I don't think that they could possibly see themselves pulling the lever for an old Trotskyist.
Interesting. Well, back to Mayor Pete. We were talking about him being a red diaper baby, and you and I both know what that is, but a lot of people don't. So I thought it would be interesting, when I was reflecting on who are the red diaper babies people might know, I think of Valerie Jarrett. I think of Barack Obama. I think David Axelrod. And, of course, there's a long list.
Right.
But so what does that mean, Paul, to be a red diaper baby?
Well, and here's I'll give you some examples of friends, allies, people on our side on the right. David Horowitz was raised a red diaper baby. He's now a big anti-communist conservative. Ron Radosh wrote the book on the Rosenbergs. How about this, Sandy? Our good friend Marvin Olasky, editor of World Magazine. So it goes to show if people don't understand what that term means. You're calling him a red diaper baby. What do you call him, a communist? No. Red diaper baby is somebody that was raised in that sort of household by Marxist parents or pro-communist parents. And oftentimes, usually that meant that at some point in their upbringing, that either made them Marxists themselves or very far left. In fact, the people that I just noted, Marvin Olasky, Ron Radosh, David Horowitz, my friend Mike Shotwell, they were all communists in their youth. They eventually left. So you could have been raised a red diaper baby and today definitely not be a communist. Our old friend Herb Romerstein as well. Who I dedicated my book Dupes to. He became one of the great anti-communists in America. Now, Obama, on the other hand, Obama was raised that way by a mother who was at least pro-communist, by a mentor in the 1970s, Frank Marshall Davis. I wrote an entire book about him called The Communist. In fact, Davis's Communist Party USA number was 47544. And in the case of somebody like Obama, it explains how when he got to the presidency, he's not secretly a card-carrying member of Communist Party USA, but he's very far in the left, right? So that kind of upbringing helps mold the guy and puts him on the left. In Obama's case, kept him on the left. And Mayor Pete was raised in that kind of a household. And in his case, which is really quite curious, his father, Pete was the only child to his parents, and his father was Joseph Buttigieg, and this is really wild, Sandy. Joseph Buttigieg was the the foremost expert internationally in the world, certainly in the English-speaking world, on the famous, infamous Italian Marxist Antonio Gramsci. Joseph Buttigieg was the actual translator of the Gramsci prison notebooks. There were 33 prison notebooks, and Joseph Buttigieg published them through Columbia University Press. I have two or three volumes on my desk. They're like 700 pages each. And Antonio Gramsci, this is crucial. Antonio Gramsci is famous for Marxism applied to culture. The Gramscis, they're all about cultural hegemony. Joseph Buttigieg, Pete's dad, was the head of the International Gramsci Society. If you Google right now International Gramsci Society and click their website, the thing that's at the top of the page and has been there for a year now since Joseph's death in January 2019 is a glowing tribute to its founder, Joseph Buttigieg. So they were Marxists applying Marx not so much to class and economics and taxes and labor issues, but to culture. And where is Mayor Pete really radical? Not that I know of on economics and taxation and that kind of thing, but on culture, abortion, obviously LGBTQ issues. I mean, he's a man married to another man. Religion, his applying of his interpretation of scripture. And so I wrote a piece for American Spectator, Mayor Pete, Red Diaper Baby. It's about 4,000 words in length. And it lays out some of these backgrounds and facts and how I think it influenced Mayor Pete as to where he is today.
Let me just say, we'll post that, by the way, on our Facebook page so that you can read it. Fascinating. You talk about part of the – now, this is new to me. Honestly, I didn't know who Joseph Gramsci was. These are words and people I didn't know about, Paul. But he was – how would you compare his impact or size or maybe even his philosophy to Karl Marx? I mean, he was after Karl Marx, but he influenced what group? He had his own school of thought on communism then.
Yeah. So it's known, I mean, those people are known as basically Gramscians, right? A Gramscian Marxist. So just like you would have a Trotskyist who would, maybe the most defining feature of a modern Trotskyist would be this belief in permanent revolution, which again is why it's kind of alarming when Bernie's running around using that word revolution all the time. It's a red flag, pun intended, right?
Yeah.
But the Gramsci followers, they focused on culture. They were all about, they believed in what has been referred to constantly referred to as a long march through the institutions. So they believe that not until, let's just say, the extreme left, we'll call it that to make it maybe more easy, not until the far left, the extreme left, took media, the universities, the institutions of culture, not until you took those, you had control of those, would you really be able to change the people, the culture, the country. And that's what this Italian Marxist Gramsci believed in. Samuel Gregg of the Acton Institute has called Gramsci, because of this, the most dangerous socialist in history. That's an element of what he did that people don't even know about. These kind of Marxists especially were active in the Frankfurt School in the 1920s, 1930s. Herbert Marcuse, Wilhelm Reich, the Marxist who literally wrote the book and coined the term, the sexual revolution. So they were all about culture, culture, culture. And that's Joseph Buttigieg is coming out of that, cultural Marxist. The left hates that term. They're now using it as a term to try to smear people with. But they were Marxists operating on the cultural front, just as there were sexual Marxists like Wilhelm Reich, applying Marx to Freud and Marx to sexuality. Here, these Marxists applied their Marxist worldview to culture. They were cultural Marxists.
Well, let me just underscore what you're saying from your own article here. You talk about the Gramsci school insisting on questioning everything, including moral absolutes and the Judeo-Christian basis of Western civilization. They called it critical because they were critical of everything, critical theory, which we see playing out in Pete Buttigieg's almost every conversation, every speech, every time he talks. He is questioning Judeo-Christian values. There's a joke. I don't know if you saw the Babylon Bee's story about how the Buttigieg commentary Bible, where it explains away every verse.
Wow.
But anyway. Yes, exactly. So, I mean, we see that he's obviously influenced by that. It's not like, I wonder if he is influenced by that. That's an absolute. But you're not saying that Pete is a communist. You're saying he was raised by a man who was part of that movement, certainly interested in it. When we come back, because there's the music, when we come back, let's talk about now. We could talk theoretically about these guys, which we are, but let's talk about their policies and how they correlate or do not with the policies of communism in other countries where it's been tried. My guest is Paul Kinger, and by the way, his article, Mayor Pete, Red Diaper Baby, we'll put on our Facebook page so that you can read it. And, of course, Paul has written so many other books on communism that we commend to you. We'll put several of them on our Facebook page, and you can see they're just great. He's a great writer, by the way. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I think what I learned, one of the things that I think I learned on my trip, you know, as a socialist, the word socialism does not frighten me, and I think it's probably fair to say that the Nicaraguan government is primarily a socialist government. You may recall way back in, when was it, 1961, they invaded Cuba, and everybody was totally convinced that Castro was the worst guy in the world, that all the Cuban people were going to rise up in rebellion against Fidel Castro. They forgot that he educated their kids, gave them health care, totally transformed the society. But just because Ronald Reagan dislikes these people does not mean to say that the people in their own nations feel the same way.
So there's Bernie Sanders in 1985, waxing eloquent about Fidel Castro. My guest is Paul Kinger. Paul, that was 1985. So I'll just let you comment on that.
Yeah, this big believer in democracy, right? Talks about democracy all the time. Well, Fidel Castro in January 1959, in fact, he also did this in a trip to the United States in April 1959, he promised the people of Cuba and the people of America and the world that he believed in democracy, as he called it, and that he believed in the right to vote and to elect your president. And Fidel Castro went to his grave, never once standing for a presidential election. His brother, Raul, hasn't. It's been 60 years now and counting for the Great Revolution in Cuba, and they've never once elected their own leader. And the reason that they never held an election is because the Castros know what apparently Bernie didn't know, that if they ever held an election there, they'd have 90% of the people would vote against them. That's why they never held an election there. That is an absolutely ridiculous, insane idea. And there he is, most important of all, commending, as he has consistently for many decades now, Sandy, the healthcare system in Cuba. And that's absolutely outrageous. In fact, as any social democrat, let's just call them that, from Europe knows, you can have government-provided healthcare without resorting to totalitarian communism. There's a lot of different ways to deliver healthcare, including universality. It might not be great, but you could at least do it without having a totalitarian despotism like they have in Cuba. But that's the kind of far left insanity that Bernie Sanders has been all about throughout his entire career. And the idea that guy might be able to get the Democratic Party's nomination in 2020 is really a sad testimony to how far left the Democratic Party has gone.
You know, recently an old tape came to my attention. It was Bernie Sanders and his wife. Now, he's saying now it wasn't their honeymoon, but they said at the time they referred to it as their honeymoon. So I'll leave it up to the world to decide if this indeed was. They'd just gotten married. He was the mayor of the mayor from Vermont, and they were in Moscow, and they were sitting in their underwear. I couldn't see her. I did see him in his I guess he had tidy whities on, I'm not sure, but he was bare-chested, and he's singing with everyone else bare-chested with a bunch of Russians. Here's what it sounded like, and then, Paul, I know you know about this situation, and I'm eager to hear, but let's listen to a little bit of it. Clip 10.
When they finish it, the other side has to sing their own song.
Uh-oh.
What are we going to sing? As director said, added the two videos was, today, the distinctive feature of our economy is competition.
This land was made for you and me.
Okay, well, as bizarre as it sounds, you should see it. And it's Bernie Sanders and his wife in their underwear singing with other Russians at a table drinking, singing This Land Is Your Land. Paul Kinger, what's that all about?
Yeah, Woody Guthrie, the old collectivist classic, This Land Is Your Land. How appropriate is that? It's amazing. I've known about this for a long time, and I was really pleased to see when the video came out last year. And the publication that broke it, Sandy, was Forward, which is the a Jewish leftist publication. It's a publication of the Jewish faith, so that it's well known as that. It's been around for a long time, and they broke it. I was really really pleased to see that they released that, and it was 1988, and you know, he really, I don't know if he's denied that it was his honeymoon or not. I wrote a piece on this about this time last year for American Spectator called Bernie Bolshevik Party Boy. And I quote in there an interview that Bernie did with Thomas Roberts of MSNBC back in October 2015. And this is, again, MSNBC. And to Roberts' credit, here's the exact quote. He said to Bernie, point blank, "Did you go on your honeymoon to the Soviet Union?" And Bernie shrugged and he said, "The fact is that I went to establish a sister program with Yaroslavl, then in the Soviet Union, now an important city in Russia. The purpose of that trip was a sister city. Did it take place after my marriage? It did." So, which seemed to be a kind of a concession that, yeah, it was his honeymoon. It was pretty much effectively his honeymoon. They had just gotten married. The first trip that they took was there. And, you know, maybe it wouldn't be considered by most people's definition a full-blown honeymoon. But for Bernie and Comrade Jane, yeah, that's where they went. And it's so absurd to see them sitting there swilling vodka and, you know, with these old-line communist apparatchik officials in Yaroslavl. And they're singing "This Land Is Your Land." You can't make this stuff up. It's like a Saturday Night Live parody of all things.
Oh, it really, or a Monty Python. I mean, that's what it reminds me of. It's just bizarre. But Paul, I know we could laugh about it, and we do, and we need to. But I wanted now to the point in the remaining time that we have, as you watch Bernie Sanders' proposals and Pete Buttigieg's proposals, where do you see the correlation with the communist influence with Bernie? I think it's purposeful. Pete is a red diaper baby. Where do you see that coming out in their policies?
Well, with Bernie, definitely for example, his single payer health plan, and people don't realize just how radical that is. I mean, look, you listen to the honest Democrats explain it. This is way to the left of Obamacare. Right. I mean, this would be, which is why Michael Bloomberg, the first time he was on the stage, was trying to tell the apparently left wing crazies in the audience, He said, if you go with Bernie's plan, 150 million people who actually like their private health insurance would have to give it up. And you didn't see Bernie object to that. I mean, you know, that's a perfect example. And also, too, and this is why people in the media need to ask him. They say, okay, look, we can all debate today what a socialist is, but if you Google the word socialism, the one kind of one-sentence definition that pops up is common ownership or public ownership of the means of production, which means that a typical socialist in a typical socialist government anywhere in the 20th century in Europe or the Soviet Union would nationalize healthcare, probably transportation, trucking, boats, rail, airlines. In Clement Attlee's Labor Party, 1945 to 51 in Britain, they nationalized the car companies. Hitler, who was a nationalist socialist, nationalized car companies. They nationalized energy. Clement Attlee and Labor did. Coal, gas. And so you might ask Bernie, okay, would you favor, beyond nationalizing healthcare, which industries in the United States that Bernie Sanders was president and can wave a magic wand, what all would you have the government take over? And that's a very legitimate question. And if he could say, well, nothing other than healthcare, which is why I'm not really the Trotskyist that everybody fears that I am, well, that would be pretty reassuring. I'd like to hear that. So that's something that people ought to ask. It's completely reasonable.
Yeah. With Pete, let me make sure I understood this. With Pete Buttigieg, the red diaper baby, his father being a communist, the follower of a famous Italian communist, more than a follower, an editor, a writer himself. With Pete, you say that his leftist underpinnings seem to come out more in the moral issues, the moral anarchy.
Right.
But some of his policies, too, because he's asking. His health care plan is, I don't know the distinctions, but it's still universal health care, government run, which I think at its core is socialist communist. To have the government control our health care is very personal and dangerous. But also in your article, you point out that Pete was a real fan of Bernie Sanders before anyone had ever heard of him.
Yeah, that was amazing. Now that was something I was floored when I saw that. And in fact, I was actually traveling on the road, and it was a Grove City College parent, a mom, who sent me the link and said, "You got to see this." So I couldn't believe it. I went to the actual website. The JFK Library holds an annual Profiles in Courage Award. And the Profiles in Courage, that's for John F. Kennedy's famous book that launched him way back in the 1940s, 1950s. And they give an annual Profile in Courage essay award every year to a high school senior. You could go on the library website and see all of them going back to, fortunately, the year 2000. Guess who won it in the year 2000? This young boy from South Bend, Indiana, named Pete Buttigieg. And guess who he nominated for his Profiles in Courage Award? This is incredible. He nominated Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders. Now, for people listening right now, especially younger people, in 2020, Bernie Sanders is a household name. In 2000, and Sandy, you can back me on this, you wouldn't have found one person out of 300 million in America who would have nominated Bernie Sanders, other than Pete Buttigieg, apparently. So the fact that a young Pete would have picked Bernie Sanders, the independent socialist senator or congressman from Vermont, citing his socialism as his Profiles in Courage, is just astounding. He didn't pick an astronaut. He didn't pick an explorer. He picked Bernie Sanders, of all things. And the only way that you could get a kid from South Bend who would have even been thinking of a politician from Vermont like that would be if he was raised in a household like the household of Joseph Buttigieg, a Gramscian Marxist, which is why the upbringing matters, how they're raised. And I've read Mayor Pete's memoir. You can see his father's influence on this kind of radicalism all through it. So the fact that he was where he was in the year 2000, again, that's another influence of a kind of a red diaper influence, upbringing.
I want to talk to you quickly before we run out of time about style. From the very beginning, Pete Buttigieg has reminded me of Barack Obama in style. Very easy, like a smile, and always smooth, and hardly ever gets ruffled, and, you know, just able to respond and answer questions. But if you understand the subject matter, you can see the holes. You can drive a truck through them. But because of the style, it's very deceiving. Is there what's going on with that? Is there a training school for style among the left?
Yeah. Well, if you look at Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders in that debate with Mike Bloomberg, where Pete looked the best by far and away.
Yes.
If you look at some of the other leftists on stage, they didn't do too well on style. And in fact, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders come off, both of them, as kind of angry, hysterical. Mm-hmm. I think they're terrible on style. Ditto for Amy Klobuchar. Biden is pretty good. But Mayor Pete is really smooth, and he came off as the biggest grown-up on that stage, even though he's only, what, in his late 30s?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
He's very smooth. He's also very smooth at dissecting scripture and using it to justify everything from his redefinition of marriage to why he thinks Donald Trump is not a Christian, or at least not a very good Christian.
He is formidable. Yeah. I think he'd be a formidable opponent. Oh, Paul, we just barely scratched the surface. We could talk so much more, but hopefully we've laid the groundwork for people becoming aware a little bit, a little more knowledgeable about what's happening behind the scenes. Again, we'll put Paul's, some of his books and his recent article on Pete Buttigieg on our Facebook page. But Paul Kinger, you are a national treasure.
And, thank you, Sandy.
Thank you so much for your time today, and thank you for listening. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.